are going on vacation this weekend, so we have Dave Lewis here. A year ago this weekend, Matt was gone. We had Dave Lewis here. That was January 1st of 23. Today's December 31st of 23. I don't know what that means. If you had a good year, thank Dave. If you had a bad year, that's between the two of you, okay? So anyway, we're glad to have you, Dave, if you'd come. And
good morning. Yes, that's all true. I was here January 1st, and it's been an interesting 2023 and the last day of the year, and I'm here again. And in the in-between time, this is the 40th Sunday that I've been out preaching this year. So, and as you know, because I've been here several times, I talk about my grandkids, and if we could put that picture up. That's the crew, and for Christmas, my granddaughter Campbell, the one in the stocking hat, gave me a present, and it was a baseball cap, and it said on the front of it, Pastor Warning, and then it said, anything you say or do may be used in a sermon. Thank you for putting that up there. So there you go, a warning. And we're thinking today about, are we paying attention, as obviously she does? Are we listening and do we hear what God says? The story is told of a couple that were celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. And so they had this celebration, and they had a little program as part of it. And towards the end of the program, they said to the husband, do you have anything you'd like to say? And he stood up and he said to her, he said, my dear, through all the years, you have been tried and true. And everybody, you know, aw. But she didn't respond at all. And the kid said to him, she didn't hear you. Say it again. And he said, a little louder, you've been tried and true. And again, no response. So again, they said, louder. And he said, tried and true. She got this frown on her face, and she said, oh, yeah? Well, I'm tired of you, too. Did not hear what was said. How often when God speaks to us, do we hear? Do we really hear what he's saying? If you turn in your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 46. Isaiah chapter 46. And we hear what God is saying in Isaiah chapter 46, and we're beginning in verse 5. It says, with whom will you compare me or count me equal? To whom will you liken me that we may be compared? Some pour out gold from their bags and weigh out silver on the scales. They hire a goldsmith to make it into a god, and they bow down and worship it. They lift it to their shoulders and carry it. They set it up in its place, and there it stands. From that spot it cannot move. Even though someone cries out to it, it cannot answer. It cannot save them from their troubles. Remember this. Keep it in mind. Take it to heart, you rebels. Remember the former things, those of long ago. I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is no one like me. Now, if you go back to the 45th verse. He's already talked about this in the 21st and 22nd verses when he says, declare what is to be, present it, let them take counsel together. Who foretold this long ago? Who declared it from the distant past? Was it not I, the Lord? And there is no God apart from me, a righteous God and a Savior. There is none but me. Turn to me and be saved, all you ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is no other. This is talking to about what view do we have of God? Who can you compare me to, God says? What's our view of God? And how does our view of God cause us to live? Someone said, and I'd tell you who it was if I know, but I don't know, but that's one of the great quotes I've come across. Someone has said, I don't care what you say you believe until I see how it affects the way you live. If what we say we believe does not come out of our life, does not affect our life, it doesn't mean much. So we're in Isaiah 45, and what is he saying here? With whom can you compare me? Well, if you read this in the Message, in the fifth verse, it says this. Can you picture me without reducing me? Can you picture me without reducing me? How do we reduce God? What does it mean to reduce? Reduce means to make less than the whole, less than what it is. How do we make God less than what he is? I think there's a few ways in which we do that, meaning to or not, we do. One of those is that we give God our qualities so that we make God like us. So that if we can't figure it out, then God can't figure it out. If we can't do it, then God can't do it. So we reduce him by making him like us. And we reduce him when we make him like us, especially those of us who are getting older that can't do what we used to do, and we see God that way. Like, he can't do. I've even heard people say, well, God used to. Like, God can't do that anymore. We make him like us in that we reduce his abilities as our abilities diminish. You know, I came here to pastor in 1967, and in 1967, there was BCL and there was UW. Two different school systems. And in 1968, UW won the girls' state basketball tournament. My wife played on that team. She was not the star of the team. The star of the team was? There you go. And Denise Long set every single scoring record in girls basketball. In fact, I think she still holds most, if not all, of the scoring records. Denise Long went on to be a pharmacist in Missouri. And she was telling that one day she made a delivery to a nursing home, their prescriptions. And she said they all the people gathered in this large room, and she passed out all of their prescriptions. And when she got done, she wrapped all the stuff that she had left, all the containers and paper and stuff, she wrapped it all into a ball that ended up being about the size of a basketball. So she picked it up, and there was an open-top trash can sitting there, so she shot it. She missed it badly, and it fell on the floor. And she said as she went over to pick it up, one of the residents said to her, "You wouldn't have been much of a basketball player." Our abilities diminish. Does God's? Is God less today than when he formed the world? Is God less today than we read about in the Old Testament? Is he less today than what we read about in the New Testament? When we make him less than what he is, we reduce him. Andrew Murray, who is a devotional writer, says this, talking about the Israelites. You remember when the Israelites were going to be freed from captivity. He says, when the thought came of God doing something new, they limited him. Their expectation could not rise beyond their past experience or their own thoughts of what was possible. You following that? If I don't think it can happen, then it can't happen. He goes on to say, even so, we may be limiting God by our conceptions of what he has promised and what he is able to do. How do we limit God and his abilities? As you read the story of the Israelites and Moses leading them out of captivity, in Exodus chapter 3, Moses says to God, and when God tells him to go before the people and tell them, he says, well, who should I tell them sent me? And God says to him, tell them I am sent you. Capital letters, I am. God is the great I am. God is the strong and mighty tower. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is not the great I was. He is the great I am. Jesus picked up this theme. We see it again and again in the New Testament when Jesus said, I am the bread of life. I am the good shepherd. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the Alpha and the Omega. Do we reduce the great I am by how we respond to him? Couple of examples. This story is as old as the hills. If you haven't heard it, I will be amazed. But there's a story of a man who fell off of a cliff, and it was hundreds of feet down, sure death. But as he fell off of the cliff, there was a little tree that he was able to grab a hold of, and so he's hanging on for dear life to this tree. And he begins to yell, help, help, help. Is there anybody up there? And he hears this voice say, I'm here. And he says, who's there? And the voice says, God. And he says, God, help me. And God says, I will. Let loose of the tree and I'll catch you. And it gets real quiet, and then he says, is there anybody else up there? How often do we say to God, is there anybody else up there? How often when God asks us to do something, do we feel like, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't seem right. I wouldn't do that. We reduce God when we're fearful of what might happen, and so we take no action at all, when we do nothing. In the early 1900s, there was a tightrope walker by the name of Blondin. And his great feat back then was that he had a tightrope stretched across Niagara Falls. And the word got out, he spread the word that he was going to walk across that tightrope from the American side to the Canadian side. And he got up on the tightrope, he says, "I'm Blondin, do you believe?" And the people shouted, "We believe, we believe, we believe." And then he walked on that tightrope across to the other side. And when he got to the other side, the people were cheering, and he quieted the crowd and he said, "I am Blondin, do you believe?" And they said, "Yes, we believe." And he said, "I'm going to go back across carrying someone on my shoulders." Said, "Do you believe?" And they said, "Yes, we believe, we believe." And he said, "Who will go with me?" And the crowd got quiet. I'm always interested in these things, so the rest of the story is no one volunteered. And he ended up carrying his publicist back across because the guy figured he'd be without a job if he didn't go. But the point of the story is this, that when things look scary, do we believe that God is the great I Am? Do we believe that He can be trusted? Do we believe in Him even when we face the Goliaths in life, even when we face the great challenges? We reduce God when what we say we believe doesn't lead to action. Even when, especially when the action doesn't make sense to us. Especially when the action doesn't make sense to us. And we use our standard lines. You've heard them if you've not said them. We use our standard lines. God would never ask. Or God wouldn't want us to do that. Really? Have you read your Bible? Are you aware of how many things God asked people to do that didn't seem to make any sense at all? Couple examples in modern day. How many of you have read the book by Don Piper, 90 Minutes in Heaven? A few. I would recommend it. And you can get it. I'm only going to give you part of it, so if you want more of it, you can get the book and read it yourself. But in the book, he tells at the time he was a pastor in Texas. And he'd been to a pastor's conference, and he was going home. And as he was making his way home in Texas, he came to this long two-lane bridge. And when he got just about to the end of the bridge, a truck came around, didn't make it, and basically went up and over his car. He was pinned down in the car. The whole front was smashed, and the only way that the people could even get to him was, it was a hatchback, is by opening the hatch and coming in the back. The police got there, and they went in the back, and they checked, and they could find no pulse. The EMTs arrived shortly thereafter. They went in the back, and they checked him out thoroughly, and they could find no pulse. They called the coroner, and they were waiting for the coroner to come. It's a two-lane bridge, so the traffic is backed way up. One of the cars waiting there on the bridge is another pastor, doesn't know this Don Piper, another pastor who had been to the conference. He walked up and is visiting with some other people, and they tell him, you know, that there's a dead man up there, and he goes back, when he gets back to his car, he says to his wife, "This is really weird, but there's a dead man up there, and I believe that God is telling me to go up and pray for him." They talk about it, and she finally says, "Well, I guess do whatever you think you should do." But does that make any sense? There's a dead guy up there, and he's to go up and pray for him? But he does. I don't care what you say you believe until I see how it affects the way you live. He goes up there. He figures that the policeman will say to him, "Get out of here." But he says to the guy, "I would like to go pray for the guy." Well, as it turns out, they didn't care. They're waiting for the coroner to get there, whatever. So he goes up and he climbs in the back and it gets as far to the front as he can and reaches up and puts his hand on Don Piper's, the dead man's, shoulder and begins to pray. And he's praying, and after a while he runs out of anything to say. Wouldn't you? He runs out of that, you know, and so he starts singing hymns. And he says he starts singing hymns, and as he starts singing, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus," he suddenly stops and runs out of the car and runs up to the policeman and says, "The dead man is singing." How would we know any of that if he hadn't listened to what God told him to do? Can you think of me without reducing me? One more example and we'll be done. Man sitting in church, just like you're sitting in church today. And by the way, many of the people that follow God didn't begin on a stained glass window. They're people just like you and me who believed God, who trusted God, and who did what they felt like God was leading them to do. So this man is sitting in church, just like we're sitting here today. And as he's sitting there, he feels like God is telling him to get out of his seat, go into the aisle, and do 10 push-ups. That's crazy. And he thinks that's crazy. And he thinks, no way can God be telling me that. But he can't get it out of his head. He cannot get it out of his head. I got to admit to you, one of my first thoughts would be, can I do 10 push-ups? But at any rate, he finally gets out of his seat. This is a person just like me, just like you. Gets out of his seat, gets in the aisle, drops down, and does 10 push-ups. When he gets up and starts to get back in the pew, he looks, and there is his wife giving him the look. Men, do you know what I'm saying? Giving him the look, and he's thinking, oh, my goodness. And then he thinks, oh, my. He said, everybody in this church saw me do that. I can't go to this church anymore. I mean, he is embarrassed to death. Soon as church is over, He makes a beeline to get out of there. And he's almost running to get to the doors to get out when he's stopped by a man who says to him, You don't know me. I don't go to this church. This is the first time I've ever been in this church. He said, I was sitting there in the pew, and I said, God, if you're real, have somebody get out in the aisle and do 10 push-ups. Now, you could be saying to yourself, why would somebody think of something like that? And I would say to you, why would somebody think to lick a frog? Or to eat some of the stuff that we eat? I don't know why the guy would think of that. It seems strange. But he did. I don't know why God chose to answer that prayer, but he did. So in Isaiah 45, verse 5, God said then, God says to us today, can you think of me without reducing me?